This is Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Koppenberg. KGMI and the Cascade Radio Group receive financial compensation to present this program in its entirety.
The opinions voiced on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Koppenberg are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what is appropriate for you, consult a qualified professional. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, a registered investment advisor. Carson Partners is a division of CWM LLC, a nationwide partnership of advisors. Guests on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Koppenberg are not affiliated with CWM LLC.
Welcome to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you here on KGMI. I'm going to start out today talking about respecting millennials. You know, politics today is in large part about pitting one group against another and convincing one side that they've been treated unfairly. One of those groups is the younger generation of workers known as the millennials, who are supposedly up to their eyeballs in debt and lagging well behind prior generations. Before we get into it, let's define who we're talking about. Millennials were born between 1981 and 1996. Now, the Generation X before them were born between 1965 and 1980. And then we have the baby boomers that were born from 1946 up to 1964. And prior to that, we have the silent generation, which was born before 1946. You know, but politics is a zero-sum game. So instead of focusing on whether the pie is growing or shrinking, politicians and many others like to focus on who owns what share of the pie. In this case, the pie we're talking about is total wealth among all American households. In turn, net worth is assets, stocks, bonds, real estate, mutual funds, bank deposits, pension entitlements, and ownership in businesses, minus liabilities such as mortgages, student loans, and car loans, etc. Well, as of the middle of this year, baby boomers have 51.4% of all net worth, according to the Federal Reserve. Pretty good for a group that makes up about 21% of the U.S. population. Generation X has 28.6% of U.S. wealth. That's the group born between 65 and 80. And the millennials, who are lagging way behind, this group now has about 22% of the U.S. population, but slightly more than the boomers, but has only 5.6% of household net worth. It's no wonder some politicians have been talking about this issue. There are more millennials than boomers, but boomers have 9 times more wealth than millennials. Sounds like it's unfair, doesn't it? But the problem with these numbers is that despite being 100% accurate, they're 100% misleading. Each generation's share will rise and eventually fall as they start out young, hit their peak earnings years, pay off their debts, and then enjoy compounding returns on accumulated investments later in life, before eventually spending down these assets. Back in 1989, the silent generation had almost 80% of all net worth. Today, they have 14.4%. There's a much better way to look at the generations. Rather than looking at the share of total net worth, we should look at the average level of net worth for each generation as they age from young to old. Essentially, take each generation's total net worth, divide it by the number of households within each generation. Some generations are larger, bigger than others, and adjust for inflation. Credit where credit is due. This method was originally developed by Jeremy Horrifield, a very insightful economics professor at the University of Central Arkansas. We give his method a couple of tweaks and reached essentially the same conclusion. We estimate that the typical boomer was born in the fourth quarter of 1955. So as of mid-2021, the typical boomer was 65.5 years old. Right now, the average boomer household has a net worth of $1.629 million. However, this is an average, so it includes Jeff Bezos. By contrast, the typical Gen Xer now has $1.108 million. Yes, this includes Elon Musk. Superficially, it's advantage boomers. But the typical Gen Xer was born in the third quarter of 1972, so is about 48.75 years in the middle of this year. This means boomers have much longer to accumulate their assets and earn that compound returns. But when comparing boomers to Gen Xers, What we really want to know is how much net worth boomers have back when they were 48.75 years old. Guess what? When you adjust for inflation, the typical boomer household had about $730,000 back then, well below the Gen Xers with $1.108 million. So when you adjust for age and inflation, the average Gen X household is beating the average boomer's household. Unfortunately, the data only goes back to 1989 and can't yet directly compare millennials to boomers, but we can compare millennials to Gen X. Today, the average millennial household at age 32 has a net worth of $136,000. Yes, this includes Mark Zuckerberg. Back when Gen Xers were age 32, they had an average inflation adjusted $158,000. The bottom line is at the same point in their lives, the Gen Xers are better off than the average boomer, and the average millennial is beating the average Gen Xer. None of this means this pattern will persist. If policymakers obsess with shares of net worth rather than growing the whole pie, they may adopt more policies that slow economic growth and wealth creation than millennials could end up being thrown off track. For now, however, it is important to recognize that millennials don't have it as bad as many think. Let's talk about some strong earnings for propelling the market higher this week on a global basis. Global equities retested record highs on the strength of largely positive third quarter earnings results. The yield on the benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasury note increased to 1.64% from 1.58%, while the price of barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude rose to $82.68 from $82.20. Volatility as measured by the CBOE Volatility Index dropped to 16.0 from 16.1. And macro news, China's growth is slowing. China's third quarter GDP grew at a disappointing 4.9% as industrial activity rose less than expected in September, according to the National Bureau of Statistics of China. That missed expectations of a 5.2% expansion, according to analysts polled by Reuters. Many factories had to stop production in late September as a surge in the price of coal and a shortage of electricity prompted local authorities to abruptly cut off power. Industrial production rose by 3.1% in September, below the 4.5% expected by Reuters. Real estate and related industries, which account for about a quarter of Chinese GDP, also came in weaker than expected, up 7.3% from a year ago, compared with an expected 7.9% figure. And the Bank of England is at an imminent rate increase. Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey sent a fresh signal on Sunday that the British Central Bank is gearing up to raise interest rates for the first time since the onset of the coronavirus crisis as inflation risks mount. Bailey said he continued to believe that the recent jump in inflation would be temporary, but a surge in energy prices would push it higher and make it climb last longer, raising the risk of higher inflation expectations. Investors are speculating that the Bank of England might become the first in the world's largest central banks to raise rates, earlier, later this year, or early in 2022. And the International Monetary Fund cuts Asia's growth forecast. The International Monetary Fund slashed this year's economic growth forecast for Asia, warned that a fresh wave of COVID-19 infections, supply chain disruptions, and inflation pressures pose downside risks to the outlook. The IMF said that China's economy will grow by 8% this year, 5.6% in 2022, but that the recovery remains unbalanced as repeated coronavirus outbreaks and fiscal tightening weigh on consumption. And although Asia-Pacific remains the fastest-growing region in the world, the divergence between Asian advanced economies and emerging market and developing economies is deepening. The IMF believes the risks are tilted toward the downside, mainly on uncertainty over the pandemic, supply chain disruptions, and potential spillovers from U.S. policy normalization. And then Evergrande staves off default just before the end of a 30-day grace period. Chinese property developer Evergrande has made a key interest payment due 23rd of September, according to Chinese state media newspaper Securities Times. This will allow Evergrande to avoid a widely expected default. The $83.5 million interest payment on the indebted company's March of 22 offshore bond was being watched closely by investors after Evergrande warned twice in September that it might default. Several Chinese officials sought to reassure homebuyers and markets this week that the root of the primary sector would not be allowed to trigger a full-scale crisis. Chinese developers have increasingly taken on debt over the past few years, particularly in overseas markets. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Makeup. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for a retirement community that supports and enhances your active, independent life? Then check out Meadow Greens Retirement, located in Linden on a 5-star golf course with spectacular views. Meadow Greens Retirement offers private apartments with exceptional amenities, including a complimentary golf membership with a cart and unlimited weekday play. And when it's time to take a break from teeing off, Meadow Greens has so much to offer. You'll love tailored social activities and fine dining, not to mention panoramic views. Relax on the terrace as you soak up the rich green of the golf course and the snow-capped mountains beyond. Meadow Greens is a place where your independence is valued, your needs are taken care of, and your safety is there. Highest priority. It's retirement living at its finest with a vibrant community focused on the things you love. Call Meadow Greens today to arrange a private tour. Call 360-354-8200 and online at meadowgreenslinden.com. The grass is always greener at Meadow Greens Retirement.
Radio Real Estate with Mike Kent.
Now is the best time to sell a property that perhaps in the past you had little success getting rid of. Don't wait. Put that property on the market now.
Radio Real Estate is brought to you by Bank of the Pacific, Linden Sheet Metal, Windermere Real Estate, and Wynwood Enterprises. 10 a.m. every Saturday on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, and KGMI.com.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning here on KGMI. We're Asset Advisors, located out on the Pacific Highway in the Pacific Commerce Center. That's out there next to Wilson's Furniture. We are at 5060 Pacific Highway, Suite 101, Ferndale, 98248. Our phone number, 360-733-1200. And check out our website at wealthwakeup.com. Continuing on with this week's global summary. We're seeing that the supply chain issues are deepening. The world faces very prolonged disruptions in shipping cargo flows, an executive of leading ports operator ICTSI said, as logistical headaches such as truck shortages weigh on backed up supply chains, rebounding trade drove up volume. Different parts of the world have experienced supply chain issues such as power shortages in China, a scarcity of truck drivers in the United States, Germany, and the United Kingdom, which has caused large backlogs of goods at shipping ports. Supply chain bottlenecks have affected a variety of sectors, services, and goods, ranging from a semiconductor shortage affecting electronics and autos to problems in the supply of meat, medicines, and household products. According to CNBC, amid higher consumer demand, freight rates for goods coming from China to the U.S. and Europe have soared, which has led to higher prices once these products have hit store shelves. Experts believe that the supply chain issues could also adversely impact corporate earnings and global growth. And some quick hits here. Black Americans now account for 11% of board seats on the S&P 500 companies, edging closer to the roughly 13% representation of the U.S. population, according to a report by Spencer Stuart. Women make up 30% of all S&P 500 directors, up from 28% a year earlier and 16% a decade ago. And ethnic and racial minorities account for 47% of all new directors, compared to 22% in the prior year, according to this report. And the first Bitcoin-linked exchange-traded fund made its debut on Tuesday. The ETF, which is offered by ProShares, will trade on the New York Stock Exchange and track Bitcoin futures market. And Colin Powell, the former U.S. Secretary of State and chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, died from COVID-19 complications at the age of 84. Powell suffered from multiple myeloma, a blood cancer that studies show can make COVID vaccine less effective. Russian Central Bank increased its key interest rate sharply to 7.5% on Friday, It's the sixth hike this year in an effort to tame the highest inflation since early 2016, indicated that more rate raises are possible. Separately, President Vladimir Putin announced on Wednesday that Russians will take a paid week off to try to combat COVID-19 crisis in the country as the number of daily deaths reached its highest level since the start of the pandemic. And United Kingdom medical professionals have issued an urgent plea to the British government to reimpose some COVID restrictions due to the increased level of infections and hospitalizations in the country. The country's health minister said COVID cases may hit 100,000 a day in this winter, but that the contingency measures are not currently in place. In a related matter, coronavirus cases in Europe increased for the third consecutive month, World Health Organization officials have said. And growth in the Eurozone business activity slowed this month as firms faced rising costs due to supply chain constraints, and the bloc's dominant service sector struggled amid ongoing COVID-19 concerns, according to a recent survey. IHS's Market Flash Composite Purchasing Managers Index, which is a gauge of overall economic health, fell to a six-month low at 54.3 in October from 56.2 in September. Also on Friday, for the first time in 7 years, a key market gauge of Eurozone inflation expectations rose to 2%, which is the ECB's inflation target. And visa holders from Singapore could soon be allowed to enter Australia as the country prepares to open its borders in the coming months. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison said, starting next month, fully vaccinated Australian citizens, permanent residents, and their immediate families will be allowed to enter Sydney from overseas without needing to have further quarantine. And the wealthiest of 10% of Americans now own a record high 89% of all U.S. stocks, according to the latest data from the U.S. Federal Reserve. The growing concentration of wealth comes despite millions of new retail investors coming into the stock market for the first time during the pandemic. U.S. Food and Drug Administration authorized booster shots for both Johnson & Johnson and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines, also authorized mixing and matching vaccines, allowing Americans to get a booster shot different from the one they used in their initial dose. If you heard yesterday, I gave some very interesting statistics on Saturday morning. Moderna vaccine appears to be more effective than the others, just a little FYI. Weekly jobless claims in the U.S. hit another pandemic-era low last week as first-time filings for unemployment insurance totaled 290,000 for the weekend of the 16th of October, the U.S. Department of Labor reported. This was the second consecutive week that claims totaled less than 300,000. And home building in the U.S. unexpectedly fell in September, and permits dropped in a one-year low amid acute shortages of raw materials and labor, according to the U.S. Department of Commerce. However, the National Association of Realtors said the sales of existing homes increased 7% in September to an eight-month high. And the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission said online brokerages that are increasing revenue through the controversial industry practice of payment for order flow are turning stock trading into a game to encourage activity from retail investors. The International Monetary Fund said that interest rate increases are expected to continue across Latin America as the region reacts to inflation pressures, even while economies operate below their potential. The IMF said that inflation expectations remain anchored in Mexico as the central bank has tightened monetary policy. Unanchored expectations in Argentina will require action on a number of fronts, the IMF indicated. And Cuba reached a deal with the Paris Club of creditor nations to postpone until next year an annual debt payment due to November, according to diplomats from five of the governments involved. This is the latest sign that the communist-run country is suffering a grave foreign exchange crisis. And demand for U.S. single-family rental homes rose 9.3% in August year-over-year, up from 2.2% year-over-year increase in August of last year, according to CoreLogic. For the first time since before the pandemic hit, all major metropolitan housing markets covered by CoreLogic showed positive rent growth. Miami led the way with a 21% gain, followed by Phoenix at 19% and Las Vegas at 15%. And earnings news for the week. About 20 3% of the constituents of the S&P 500 index reported for the third quarter of 21. Blended earnings per share, which combines reported data with estimates for those that have yet to report, shows that earnings growth is running at 32%, while sales rose about 15% compared with the same quarter a year ago, and that is according to data from FactSet Research. Let's give you the September existing home sales report for September. Existing home sales surprised to the upside in September, posting the largest monthly gain in a year and rising to the fastest pace since January. Since the pandemic hit U.S. shores in early 2020, sales of existing homes have been made through a wild ride. Now, it looks like the upward trend in sales may be returning despite the buyers' ongoing struggle with higher prices and lack of supply. The number of listed but unsold existing homes was 1.27 million in September, the lowest number for any September on record dating back to 1999. Our expectation is that listings will soon move upward again, at least on a seasonally adjusted basis, as virus fears fade. Meanwhile, the month's supply of existing homes for sale now, which is how long it would take to sell today's inventory at the current price, fell to 2.4 months in September, remaining near record lows. Despite the ongoing shortage of listings, there is still significant pent-up demand from the pandemic, with buyer urgency so strong in September that 86% of existing homes sold on the market for less than a month. The combination of strong demand and sparse supply has pushed median prices up 13.3% in the past year, but the good news is that the price gains have been decelerating rapidly since hitting a year-over-year gain of 23.6% in May. And sales in 2021 are on track to be the highest for any calendar year since 2006. We expect another solid year in 22 as more inventory becomes available and price gains continue to moderate. Millennials are now the largest living generation in the U.S. and have begun to enter the housing market in force, making up over 50% of new mortgage issuance for the first time since in 2019. This represents a demographic tailwind for sales in the foreseeable future. In other news, initial jobless claims fell 6,000 last week to 290,000. Meanwhile, continuing claims declined to 122,000 to 2.481 million. Both of these readings represent new lows for the pandemic recovery and signaling acceleration in job gains in October. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up. We'll be right back.
Keep up with what's happening in Linden with Bo Wild and the Linden Hometown News on KGMI.
It's brought to you by Jake's Barbecue in Linden, home of the Underground Burger and all of your barbecue favorites.
Join Deanna and Bo for the latest on what's happening in and around Linden.
Apple harvests and pumpkins and pumpkin spice, everything, it seems like. And of course, corn mazes, too.
Bo knows Linden, and so will you with the Linden Hometown News, Mondays on the KGMI Morning News.
Hi, this is Marcus from Western Solar. Now just may be the best time to go solar at your home or business. Why? Because we're offering a zero down financing on premium Panasonic high efficiency solar panels with a rock solid 25-year warranty. This labor and equipment warranty ensures that your solar system will not cost you a dime after it's installed. So you get the local trusted quality of installation with Western Solar and the peace of mind knowing that it's backed by international financial security for the next 25 years. And there's a 26% tax credit that is scheduled to expire at the end of 2022. When we install solar, it's not just a way to save you money. It's a way for you to leave a legacy of clean, affordable energy for the generations that follow. Call Western Solar today. We're local, well-informed, and we'll give you an honest assessment of your options. Stop by our office on Home Road in Bellingham to meet our team, and you'll see why that for almost two decades, we've been installing clean energy, investing in our community, and loving what we do. Western Solar at westernsolarinc.com.
Dedicated to Duty, brought to you by LTI Inc., informs you about the Bellingham Police Department's hiring event. Interested in becoming a part of your community's law enforcement? It's the perfect time. Coming up on November 6th, Bellingham Police Department is hosting the Law Enforcement and Corrections Written and Physical Exam. All you need to have is a valid driver's license, be 21 years of age, have 2 years of general education toward a degree, and be wishing to make a difference in your community. Law enforcement does so much for our Bellingham community, and they are looking to add more faithful people to their team. The exam will be held at Whatcom Community College. Register online at publicsafetytesting.com. Looking for a rewarding new career? LTI Inc. is hiring. Part of the Linden family of companies, LTI is a leading provider of bulk transportation services. Now hiring for local, regional, and line haul positions. Call 800-327-6255 or go to linden.com.
I smell a rat.
Ah, rats.
You dirty rat.
Don't rat me out.
You look like a drowned rat.
You're as quiet as a mouse.
Are you a man or a mouse?
We gotta get out of this rat race.
Jim, is that you? Who are you talking to?
That's the rats, Sheila. Also the mice. They've started to invade again. I was hoping they'd respond if I spoke their language.
There's gotta be a better way, Jim.
There is a better way. The Biobug way. Biobug Pest Management. Service you trust. Experience you expect. Visit biobug.com today.
Cascade Radio Group has an immediate full-time opening for a news reporter to join our growing team at Heritage News Talk Station KGMI. We are seeking someone who is enthusiastic, dependable, and passionate about news. The ideal candidate has both journalism and broadcasting experience. Responsibilities include writing and recording news stories, conducting interviews, serving as producer for our afternoon news talk show, and maintaining station websites and social media. Email your resume to hr@cascaderadiogroup.com. Cascade Radio Group is an equal opportunity employer.
The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
A properly operating furnace will guarantee that you stay comfortable as the seasons change. Contact West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electric for a system inspection today at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com.
Welcome back. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning with Wolf Wake Up here on KGMI. I'm going to continue on with this week's economic report. September housing starts. In the past 15 months, housing starts have averaged 1.554 million annual rate, and starts this September came in at 1.55 million, almost exactly that average, about 1.6% lower than August. Starts continue to bounce around. The average in builders deal with ongoing issues surrounding supply chains and shortage of labor. In addition, housing activity was likely held back by Hurricane Ida, which caused power outages in Louisiana and flooding in New Jersey. Looking at the details, all of the decline in September came from the volatile multifamily sector, where activity fell 5% due to weakness in the Northeast and the South. Meanwhile, single-family construction was unchanged. However, in the last year, multifamily starts are up 38.5%. Single-family starts have fallen 2.3%. It looks like developers may be shifting some resources away from single-family home construction and towards larger apartment buildings in response to rapid rising rents as some people move back into big cities and the eviction moratorium ends. Zillow estimates that rental costs for new tenants is up 9.3% in the past year, and ApartmentList.com estimates that they have risen an even faster 15.1%, easily exceeding typical gains in the 3-4% range. Recent distributal side effects in housing construction remains healthy. Looking at the 12-month moving average of over housing starts to help shift through current recent volatility shows residential construction now stands at its fastest pace since 2007. And while the monthly pace of activity will ebb and flow as the recovery continues, we expect housing starts to remain in an upward trend. A big reason for our confidence is that builders have a huge number of permitted projects sitting in the pipeline waiting to be started. In fact, the backlog of projects has been authorized and not yet started is currently the highest since the series began back in 1999. So given this, it's not surprising or worrisome that permits and new building projects fell 7.7% in September. Keep in mind, the U.S. needs roughly 1.5 million housing starts per year based on population growth and scrappage, which is voluntary knockdowns and natural disasters, etc. However, we haven't built that many new homes in any calendar year since 2006. With plenty of future building activity in the pipeline, builders are looking to boost inventory of homes and meet consumer demand. And as more millennials finally enter the housing market, it looks very likely that construction in 2021 will cross the 1.5 million unit benchmark this year and then move higher in 2022. In other recent housing news, the NAHB Housing Index increased to 80 in October from 76 in September, indicating that plenty of demand for housing. And look at your September industrial production and capacity utilization report. September was a perfect storm for the U.S. industrial sector, with lingering effects from Hurricane Ida and ongoing supply chain issues coming together to generate an ugly report. The headline index fell 1.3% in September, with every major category contributing to the decline. Meanwhile, readings on activity in prior months were revised down as well. Overall, the Federal Reserve estimates that roughly half of the decline in industrial production in September can be attributed to the hurricane. Looking at the details, the manufacturing sector led the headline index lower, falling 0.7%. Both auto and non-auto manufacturing posted declines, but the 7.2% drop in the auto sector due to ongoing issues with semiconductor shortages illustrates the persistence of supply chain disruptions in certain key sectors. Meanwhile, activity in the mining sector fell 2.3%, though the Federal Reserve made a point of noting that this was entirely due to short-term Hurricane Ida disruptions. Looking for the mining sector, thinking of oil rigs in the Gulf, to be a tailwind for overall industrial production in the months ahead as activity ramps up on crude oil and natural gas extraction, spurred on by a rebound from the Ida-related problems, as well as prices that are now at the highest level since 2014. Finally, utilities output fell 3.5% in September as demand for air conditioning declined after an unseasonably warm August. Looking at things more broadly, the decline leaves industrial production 1.3% below its pre-pandemic level, and production still is a long way to go to meet current demand. For example, last week's report on retail sales showed that consumer spending is up 18.9% over the same period. Ongoing issues with supply chains and labor shortages are hampering a more robust rise in activity, with job openings in the manufacturing sector currently near a record high and more than double pre-pandemic levels. This mismatch between supply and demand is why inflation continues to defy the transitory narrative. Look for industrial production to start bouncing back in the months ahead in an effort to close that gap. Well, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about what's going on in that $3.5 trillion spend and tax monstrosity. But, you know, due to the incredible length of the bill, it's 2,465 pages. It's about the length of two King James Bibles. There are thousands of separate provisions, far more than can properly be analyzed by legislators and or the public. But there are 10 issues in there we think are really crazy. For example, $25 million for anti-discrimination and bias training for the Department of Health and Human Services. There have been several instances where federal agencies promoting critical race theory and similarly have left far-left agendas to employers. Well, in this case, they want to give this money to the Department of Health and Human Services for that same reason, which is the largest non-defense agency. There's $200 million in there for the Presidio Trust. That's Pelosi's park. Section 70203 of the bill earmarks $200 million for Presidio Park, a park located in the north end of San Francisco, which is represented by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. The Presidio Park contains many scenic areas, and even a golf course. And of course, San Francisco is one of the wealthiest parts of the country, can easily afford to support the park, which makes the handout egregious and even without Pelosi's involvement. Then there's welfare for journalists. While the bill contains many tax hikes, it opens loopholes for some politically favored groups. One of these would give a tax credit toward compensation of local news journalists. The Secretary of Treasury is required to issue regulations and guidance that are necessary, which could allow the government to determine what counts as news. Worse, the tax credit is refundable, meaning that a money-losing organization will get a check from Uncle Sam, rather than simply not owning everything, which means is corporate welfare. This will serve to prop up media organizations that the public doesn't consider valuable through enough to support voluntarily. And there's $1.25 billion for activists, bureaucrats to go after landlords. The activists left insist that housing is a right. This must be supersedes fundamental private property rights, including the ability of property owners to evict tenants who refuse to honor their rental agreements. Then there's $4.5 billion for federal housing plant takeover. The bill seeks to impose a federal takeover of housing policy, both through construction of massive amounts of public housing and by strong-arming local governments into changing zoning rules. They want to bend local communities to the will of Washington elites on the texture of local neighborhoods, undermines the ability of families and local governments to determine for themselves the distinct features of their communities. $26.5 billion for left-wing transportation programs. Congress is on the verge of passing a $1 trillion infrastructure bill that came together following months of bipartisan negotiation. This means that this money would be passed outside of those negotiations. This is one reason that some Republicans voted for the bill in the first place, is because they agreed with the infrastructure. Now they go around them and stick these other things in there. Then there's extra funding for bureaucrats' ad campaigns. This one's kind of interesting. The legislation contains trillions of dollars worth of new benefit programs. Normally, the price of a program is understood to include the cost of paying government employees who administer it, along with necessary public awareness activity. This bill is littered with at least $13.3 billion in additional funding specifically for federal bureaucrats and billions more for ad campaigns. $197 billion to subsidize hiring local teachers. The spending package includes hundreds of billions of dollars worth of less vision of education, including free community college tuition, free school meals, poorly crafted pre-K programs. Even smaller education programs are flawed. And then $7.5 billion for community slush fund. One of the housing initiatives in this bill gives $7.5 billion to community restoration relocation fund. And then there's also number 10, two decades of funding for obscure tech accounts. Two sections in the bill provide about $2.35 billion to Federal Citizen Services Fund, which deals with government websites and information and technology and executive for the executive branch. These are normally appropriation items that Congress passes. This is the sort of largesse taxpayers' expense, demonstrates a complete lack of prioritization, and characterizes the legislation as a whole. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up here on KGMI. We'll be right back.
IKO Sumas is hiring for multiple great-paying positions, from entry-level line operators to supervisors. IKO is a global roofing manufacturer producing shingles and roofing accessories. They offer on-the-job training with entry-level positions starting at over $22 an hour, along with excellent benefits and the opportunity to grow your career all across the globe. Join the IKO team today. Apply online at IKO.com. IKO is an equal opportunity employer in a drug-free workplace.
This is Heidi Person, General Manager of the Cascade Radio Group, with a look at some good news in our community that we like to call the upside.
Phil Dyer is many things: a Vietnam vet, the owner of Sterling Real Estate Group, and the proud sponsor of a Cambodian school. Two decades ago, he heard about a program to build schools in rural Cambodia. After using profits from his business and raising money from friends, Phil funded the construction of the Dyer Family Friendship School. Since 2005, about 2,500 students have been educated there, and Sterling Real Estate continues to support the school by donating a portion of every commission. For Phil, it's an honor and a duty to help people around the world, and he loves to imagine what the students will one day accomplish.
The Upside is brought to you from a grant provided by Bayside Coin and Jewelry, the largest buyer and seller of gold and silver in the Northwest. Bayside Coin and Jewelry in the Iowa Business Park.
If you have good news to report, email it to us at theupside@cascaderadiogroup.com.
The Hugh Hewitt Show.
It's great to be on in Bellingham.
9 a.m. to noon each weekday.
Got nothing to do with the Republicans. There's disarray in the House. There's disarray in the Senate. There's disarray among Democrats across the United States. There's disarray in the White House. There's disarray wherever there's a D. D, Democrat, goes along with disarray.
On KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com. Get informed and inspired with Saturday Morning Live on KGMI. Join a group of knowledgeable hosts as they present a variety of guests and viewpoints on issues important to our area and to you and your family. Sponsored by Asset Advisors LLC at Linden Sheet Metal each Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com.
'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning here on KGMI. If you got questions for us, give us a call, 360-733-1200. Going to talk a little bit about 401k plans, things that you need to know, that saving for retirement is important. But there's also other things you might or well should be knowing about your plan. You know, most people are familiar with a 401k to some extent. Investopedia says it's a retirement savings plan offered by many American employers and has tax advantages to savers. In other words, a 401k plan is set up by employers to help employees save for retirement. Well, we all know that saving for retirement is important. However, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics survey in 2019, only 43% of workers participated in a retirement savings plan. No one ever regrets starting to save too early, so why are less than half of the workforce contributing to 401k plans? You know, there's no definitive answer, but perhaps more people understood the opportunities available through their 401k plan, they would be more inclined to save. Now, that also applies to simple retirement plans and other forms of retirement plans that are available. There's four things you need to know. It's free money on the table, first of all. Many employers set up a plan with matching program to encourage employees to save. For example, some plans include a safe harbor, where the employer matches 100% of the first 3%, 50% of the next 2%, which means basically 4% of your payroll. So this means if you save 5% of your paycheck, you're going to get 4% back in a match. It's important to understand how your employer may be contributing to your retirement plan, because you're leaving money, free money on the table if you aren't saving. If you save, they're required to do the match. And so number two, Roth contributions up to $19,500. $26,000 if you're over age 50, regardless of income. You know, many people think that making too much money to contribute to a Roth, so they either consider backdoor Roth, which probably is going to go away if they haven't have their way in this tax bill they're trying to get through, or they're going to end up saving on a pre-tax basis only. It's true you can't contribute to a Roth IRA if you make over $140,000 or $208,000 if you're married, filing jointly in this year. However, the rule does not apply to Roth 401k plans. There's no limit for Roth plans. That means anyone, regardless of income, can save $19,500 plus the $6,500 if they're over 50 years of age on a pre-tax Roth basis, as long as their company's 401k plan includes a Roth provision. And most plans do these days. Roth contributions are made with after-tax dollars, so your account grows tax-free. Roth distributions in retirement are generally not subject to income taxes. On the other hand, withdrawals from a traditional pre-tax retirement account are considered to be taxable income. Third reason, 401k plans generally have better creditor protection than other retirement accounts. So if you're like most Americans, you have some level of debt, it's important to understand which accounts are protected from creditors before taking a distribution if you're in a financial pinch. While it may be tempting to make an early withdrawal from your 401k plan, the money you save up in your company's retirement plan is generally protected from creditors, bankruptcy procedures, and court judgments, because these plans are set up under what we call ERISA, or the Employee Retirement Income Security Act. And individual retirement accounts are protected against bankruptcy up to a certain amount. However, they're not ERISA qualified, so they don't have the same level of protection as your 401k. If you have an IRA, you may want to consider rolling it into your 401k plan for better creditor protection if your plan allows rollover contributions. And Roth IRAs are not allowed to be rolled over into Roth 401k plans under current rules. Number four, you may be able to assess your retirement savings before you actually retire. Unlike IRAs, 401k plans are set up with loan provisions, meaning that you can borrow from your retirement plans savings and pay yourself back with interest typically within 5 years. That is, some plans allow loans. Plans generally allow loans up to 50% of your invested balance or up to $50,000, whichever is less. you don't have to pay any penalty fees or taxes when you take out the loan. However, if you leave your current employer, you're going to have to pay off that money remaining balance within a short period of time, or you're going to be subject to taxes and early withdrawal penalties if you're under the age of 59 and a half. Another way to assess your savings may be through a hardship distribution. Hardship distribution allows you to take money out of your plan without paying any penalty fees if you're experiencing an immediate and heavy financial need. The amount of the withdrawal is taxable and limited to the amount of the hardship, medical care, expenses, tuition, etc. The third way to get your money out before you retire is through in-service distributions at age 59 and a half. Sometimes employees may consider rolling over part or all their assets as they mature because they want more investment options outside of their 401k plan. We're finding that to be a big deal as we move ahead because a lot of 401k plans have significantly reduced the number of investment options that we have. If your employer doesn't currently offer a 401k plan, there are other ways for you to save for retirement. First of all, it's an IRA or a Roth where you can do $6,000 a year, $7,000 if you're over age 50. We do expect that number to go up quite a bit this year because of the cost of living increase from last year. And between two accounts, if you work for yourself, you can create your own retirement plan, usually a simple or a SEP. Those are things that we can also talk about to you if you are interested in pursuing that route. Okay, well, let's talk about the proposed electric vehicle tax credit. It basically, is going to benefit wealthy individuals and unions and not the environment. You know, the image of a stereotypical car salesman, President Biden and congressional leadership are pitching a multi-$1 trillion spending package that won't cost middle-class Americans a dime. That's like telling someone you came to the dealership to buy a Honda that they could have a Mercedes instead. Sure, if the dealership backloads the payments, the price may be the same for the first few years, but not when the true costs kick in. And the $3.5 trillion tax and spend package is no different. In addition to costing everyday Americans more in taxes and higher prices, the transformation of the American economy has some very scary implications on how federal lawmakers may try to dictate the products and services that Americans buy. For example, policymakers will micromanage the economy by using tax code to subsidize electronic vehicles, and if Biden gets his way, prop up labor unions. Currently, federal government provides electric vehicle tax credits up to $7,500 for Americans who buy cars from a company that hasn't already sold more than 200,000 vehicles. Subsidies for electric vehicles may seem, at least ostensibly, to make more than widely available to ordinary Americans, and that basically has been the case. In reality, electric vehicles and other zero-emission cars fell for only about 2% of sales. In 2019, tax credits have disproportionately benefited corporations and wealthy Americans living in California. California is home to 42% of all the electric vehicles. Perhaps unsurprising, the state is banning the sale of gas-powered vehicles starting in 2035. Of the estimated $7.5 billion electric vehicle credits to be claimed between 2018 and 22, corporations are taking about half. The other half is claimed by individual Americans. 78% is going to people making over $100,000 a year. Taxpayer subsidies for corporations and high-income households could rocket under the $3.5 trillion tax and spend bill. The House of Representatives version would increase the maximum electric vehicle credit to $12,500 to make it available tax write-off or a cash rebate. The Joint Committee on Taxation estimates it will divert about $16 billion in tax revenue. The maximum credit will also be tied to ever greater micromanagement, with $500 conditional on the electric vehicle battery being American-made, $4,500 conditional on the vehicle being assembled with U.S. unionized workers. Maybe in concept that sounds like a way to proudly support American businesses and workers. It really would inflate electric vehicle costs and penalize most workers who prefer not to join a union. It could even backfire and lead to fewer electric vehicles being produced and sold in the U.S. The Center for Automotive Research estimates that labor costs in the big three unionized U.S. automakers will range from $66 to $72 an hour in 23. Labor costs of non-unionized foreign automakers is averaging about $52 an hour. Only about 14% of American auto workers are unionized in the U.S. Meanwhile, foreign automakers now employ more U.S. workers than domestic automakers. As domestic auto production is less than half of what it was 25 years ago, foreign auto production shot up 82% in the same period. Not only with higher subsidies targeted at unionized labor and U.S.-made parts, drive up costs for the subsidized vehicle. They can also shrink the types of cars that are available. According to Auto Drive America, 52 cars potentially qualify for current electrical vehicle credits. But under the $3.5 trillion spend, tax and spend package, only two cars are going to qualify for the maximum $12,500 credit. Those happen to be the same cars some parking garages are prohibiting drivers from parking in the garages due to the risk of the batteries potentially catching on fire. There are other unintended consequences, too. Foreign-owned autos companies looking to expand or build new manufacturing facilities in the U.S. might scale back or reconsider such investments. It becomes apparent that U.S. lawmakers will engage in crony energy and labor policy that gives U.S. competitors a $4,500 leg up. States that have worked hard to protect good-paying jobs, protect worker freedoms, increased economic output also could be penalized. Instead of striving for robust open and competition to attract electric vehicle investment and production in the U.S., the message automaker seems to be that we need to pay to play in the rigged U.S. market intended to benefit union bosses and wealthy individuals at the expense of hardworking Americans. And one little quick summary here. We're seeing that value stocks, we've mentioned this a lot, are usually sought for their relatively cheap prices, trading at low P.E. prices or below book values. They have been on a near decade-long losing streak, culminated by the pandemic crisis, which drove investors to lofty tech-based growth companies. But things turned around in value for in September of last year. Now, once again, they're being stalled by the Delta variant. However, as the economy begins to once again stabilize, value is coming back with a vengeance. We do expect that to continue. Value's comeback does seem inevitable. The lower prices are out of the whack. Stability will see value outperforming other factors in the coming year, which means we do expect value to continue to outperform growth. Dick Donahue with you. We'll wake up this Sunday morning here on KGMI. Give us a call, 733-1200. Don't forget our live shows on Saturday at 11. Thanks and have a great week.
The opinions voiced on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Copenberg are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what is appropriate for you, consult a qualified professional. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, a registered investment advisor. Carson Partners is a division of CWM LLC, a nationwide partnership of advisors. Guests on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Copenberg are not affiliated with CWM LLC.